Hello everyone, I'm Julia Charlton and I'm delighted to be with you today to talk about the Hong Kong Stock Exchange's listing regime for special purpose acquisition companies, also known as SPACs, and sometimes as blank check companies. This regime came into effect on the 1st of January 2022, so it's been around for over 2 years. As I'll go into more detail later, a SPAC is essentially a newly created company that raises funds in an IPO which it will use to fund the acquisition of a private operating company. The IPO funds are put into a trust account, while the SPAC's management looks for a suitable unlisted company to acquire, the target. If the SPAC acquires the target in what's called a de-SPAC transaction, the target becomes the listed company. If the SPAC fails to complete an acquisition within the required time frame, the funds are returned to the investors in the SPAC. SPACs have been around in the United States for decades, where they are used as a type of alternative investment vehicle. The term SPAC was coined in the 1990s when the focus was on the US technology, media, and healthcare industries. They saw a surge of interest in 2020 to 2021. IPO funds raised by US listed SPACs increased more than fourfold, from $13.6 billion US in 2019 to $83.4 billion US in 2020, due in part to the availability of large amounts of uninvested capital at the time. Listing via a SPAC is viewed as a preferable alternative to a traditional IPO, since it typically mitigates the increased market volatility risk of traditional IPOs, involves a shorter timeframe to listing, and allows the SPAC investors to structure the acquisition of the target in their best interests. The Hong Kong Stock Exchange noted that an increasing number of mainland companies, for whom Hong Kong is normally the preferred international listing venue, were listing on the US exchanges via SPACs. 25 SPACs headquartered in the mainland and Hong Kong were listed on US exchanges in July 2021. SPAC listings on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange were previously prevented by the Hong Kong Listing Rules' various prohibitions on the listing of shell and cash companies. In particular, listing applicants are not considered to be suitable for listing if their assets consist wholly or substantially of cash or short-term investments. This seeks to prevent companies using these assets after listing to acquire or commence new businesses that are not considered suitable for listing, and possibly circumvent the Stock Exchange's requirements for new listings. The Hong Kong Stock Exchange's requirement for a track record of at least 3 financial years also acted as a bar to SPAC listings. Other international exchanges were also looking at introducing a SPAC listing regime. The Singapore Stock Exchange and the UK put forward proposals for a SPAC listing regime in March and April 2021, respectively. A SPAC listing regime was therefore seen by the Hong Kong Stock Exchange as necessary to stave off competition for mainland and Southeast Asian company listings, particularly from the US exchanges. The Hong Kong Stock Exchange published its SPAC consultation paper in September 2021 and the results of that consultation in December 2021. The Hong Kong SPAC listing regime under a new Chapter 18B of the main board listing rules came into effect on the 1st January 2022, as I mentioned earlier. In introducing its SPAC regime, the exchange believed that Hong Kong's geographical location and proximity to mainland China and Southeast Asia would give its SPAC regime a competitive advantage over other jurisdictions' SPAC listing regimes. Guidance for SPAC listings on the exchange is set out in Chapter 2.1 of the Exchange's Guide for New Listing Applicants, which took effect on the 1st of January 2024. SPAC listings, however, dropped in popularity after 2022. In the US, there were just 22 SPAC IPOs in 2023, compared to 610 in 2021. As to the impact of the Hong Kong reforms, there have been just 5 SPAC listings in Hong Kong. These all listed in 2022 and raised $639 million US in total. Their focus has been the Asia and Greater China markets, particularly the tech and new economy sectors, consumer lifestyle companies, healthcare and biotech, and TMT industries. However, none of them seem to have resulted in the target company's listing. The first SPAC listing on the Hong Kong Exchange was Aquila Acquisition Corporation, which raised 1 billion Hong Kong dollars on its IPO, the minimum amount required under the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules. However, Aquila's stock price dropped on its first trading day to 9.7 Hong Kong dollars, 3% lower than its $10 offer price, and recorded only one live trade during the session. Market commentators speculated that the muted interest in Aquila's first day trading may have been attributable to lack of familiarity with SPACs and the prohibition on retail trades, which I'll talk about later. Aquila's target, ZG Group, resubmitted its listing application to the exchange in March 2024. If approved, ZG Group will become the first company in Hong Kong to be listed under the de-SPAC regime. Otherwise, there's been little movement in the Hong Kong SPAC market since 2022, with market commentators speculating that this might be due to the stringent listing thresholds, combined with cautious investors affected by challenging market conditions, limiting the market for SPACs, as well as rising interest rates and a weak economy. Special purpose acquisition companies, as we know, are companies without any business operations that raise funds through an IPO to acquire a target company, which, as I've mentioned, is defined as a de-SPAC target in the listing rules, within a specified period, and then list the target company. The SPAC's acquisition of or merger with the de-SPAC target, which results in its listing on the exchange, is referred to in the listing rules also as a de-SPAC transaction. A successor company is the company that results from the completion of the de-SPAC transaction. A SPAC's key personnel are the SPAC promoters, who are typically professional managers, usually with private equity, corporate finance, and/or industry experience, who establish and manage the SPAC. The SPAC promoter is ultimately the deal maker, in that it is tasked with identifying a suitable de-SPAC target, negotiating the terms of the de-SPAC transaction, and ensuring its successful completion. On introducing the SPAC regime, the exchange was mindful of the various issuers relating to their listing and took steps to maintain the quality and reputation of the Hong Kong market. The exchange was concerned that SPAC promoters might lack the knowledge and experience required to identify an acquisition target capable of providing SPAC investors with a good return on their investment. The exchange was also concerned that SPAC promoters might deliberately mislead investors as to the extent of their abilities, with fraudsters attempting to fabricate, exaggerate, or hide facts about their backgrounds while presenting themselves as successful professionals to encourage investors, or falsely misrepresenting the success or accomplishments of certain SPAC promoters. In implementing the Chapter 18B regime for SPAC listings, the exchange therefore sought to strike a balance between the potential competitive advantages of listing SPACs on the exchange and mitigating their potential risks. There are certain listing rules which don't apply to SPACs. Most importantly, these include the financial eligibility and track record requirements for listing Rule 805, the prohibition on listing cash companies under Listing Rules 805C and 1482, the requirement for listed companies to have sufficient operations and assets to warrant their listing under Listing Rules 6013 and 1324, and the prohibition on a fundamental change in principal business activities for 1 year post-listing under Listing Rules 1489 and 1490. The requirement to appoint a sponsor is shortened for SPACs to at least 1 month rather than 2 months before submission of the listing application. Some respondents to the original consultation paper commented that this would increase the time taken to conduct a de-SPAC transaction and thereby compromise the speed of the transaction, which they argued was one of the main benefits of a SPAC. However, the exchange retained the requirement, albeit with a shorter appointment period required before submission of the A1 application, explaining that the need to appoint the IPO sponsor early ensures the quality of the assets and businesses that are listed in de-SPAC transactions. This is achieved by ensuring that due diligence is performed to the same extent as for traditional IPOs. Paragraph 17 of the SFC's Code of Conduct and Practice Note 21 of the Listing Rules regarding sponsor due diligence apply. Listing Rule 18B08 requires SPACs to raise IPO funds of at least 1 billion Hong Kong dollars. By way of comparison, a company listing under the traditional IPO route requires a market cap of 500 million Hong Kong dollars. IPO funds raised by SPACs must be held in a ring-fenced escrow account in Hong Kong, operated by a trustee or custodian whose qualifications are consistent with the requirements of Chapter 4 of the SFC's Code on Unit Trusts and Mutual Funds. The exchange stated in the consultation conclusions that it is deliberately targeting experienced and reputable SPAC promoters that seek good quality targets. The exchange also considered that a minimum fundraising size of 1 billion Hong Kong dollars would help ensure that SPACs are capable of generating sufficient interest among professional investors. The minimum subscription price for SPAC shares is 10 Hong Kong dollars under Listing Rule 18B07, and the minimum board lot size and subscription amount are 1 million Hong Kong dollars under Listing Rule 18B031. The exchange considers that this provides an effective safeguard against retail investors' participation before the listing of the merged SPAC and target company. Before the de-SPAC transaction is completed, only professional investors are allowed to subscribe for and trade SPAC securities. For these purposes, professional investors include both institutional professional investors as defined in Part 1 of Schedule 1 to the SFO and high net worth investors as defined in the Securities and Futures Professional Investors Rules. Retail investors are only allowed to subscribe for and trade the shares of the successor company once it's listed on the exchange. To create an open market for SPAC securities, the open market requirement of Listing Rule 8082 is modified by Listing Rule 18B05 to require a SPAC to have at least 75 professional investors, of whom at least 20 must be institutional professional investors, who hold 75% of the securities to be listed. This modifies the general Listing Rule requirement for 300 shareholders at listing. Institutional professional investors are investors within paragraphs A to I of the definition of professional investors in Section 1 of Part 1 of Schedule 1 to the SFO. They don't include high net worth professional investors within the categories of investors set out in the Securities and Futures Professional Investor Rules, who are defined as non-institutional professional investors by Listing Rule 18B01. The requirement under Listing Rule 808 for a minimum public float of 25% and the restriction on the three largest public holders not being the beneficial owners of more than 50% of the publicly held securities also apply to SPACs. SPACs commonly offer SPAC units to IPO investors, which comprise a SPAC share and a SPAC warrant, or a fraction of a SPAC warrant carrying the right to purchase a SPAC share, which are stapled together. SPAC units start trading on the stock exchange at IPO and typically on the 52nd day after the prospectus date. The SPAC units can be split into SPAC shares and SPAC warrants at the option of the unit holder. Once separated from the SPAC share, SPAC warrants trade under their own stock ticker until the de-SPAC transaction. The exchange expressed concerns in their consultation paper that if a SPAC unit is capable of being separated into a SPAC share and a SPAC warrant immediately on the SPAC's listing, this could result in a disorderly market due to price volatility. To mitigate this problem, Listing Rule 18B06 allows auto-matching of trading orders and manual trading for SPACs. However, trading with auto-matching is subject to the exchange's volatility control mechanism, which acts to prevent extreme price volatility resulting from trading incidents such as algorithm errors or a flash crash. It triggers a 5-minute cooling off period if the price of a security varies by more than a set percentage from the price at which it traded 5 minutes earlier. The percentage level varies according to the market capitalization of the relevant security. Different price deviation percentage parameters apply to SPAC shares and SPAC warrants. The exchange has said that it will review the volatility control mechanism, triggering thresholds and an appropriate time after the launch of the SPAC regime to determine its effectiveness. As I mentioned earlier, SPAC promoters play an important role in the SPAC process and are ultimately the deal makers responsible for identifying a suitable de-SPAC target, negotiating the terms of the de-SPAC transaction, and seeing to its successful completion. As set out in Listing Rules 18B10 during the listing and on an ongoing basis during the SPAC's lifetime, the exchange must be satisfied as to the character, experience, and integrity of each SPAC promoter, and that each SPAC promoter is capable of meeting a standard of competence commensurate with its position. SPAC promoters are the persons who establish a SPAC and or beneficially own shares issued by the SPAC. The exchange's guide for new listing applicants notes that in determining the suitability and or eligibility of a SPAC promoter, the exchange may conduct a suitability assessment and will take into account the non-exhaustive factors and considerations relevant to SPAC promoters, including their experience and expertise, and any other relevant information provided by the SPAC. The basic factors are set out in paragraphs 6 and 7 of Chapter 2.4 of the Guide for New Listing Applicants. If there are multiple SPAC promoters, the exchange takes a holistic approach to determining whether the requirements for management and investment experience are met. For example, if the main SPAC promoter, that is one holding significant and dominant interest in the promoter shares, has extensive management and investment experience, while another SPAC promoter has a relatively short operating history but a strong management team, the exchange will take this all into account and may impose additional conditions on a SPAC promoter. For example, the exchange could stipulate that if a responsible officer of the SPAC promoter who has the relevant management and investment experience should leave, then this will constitute a material change in the SPAC promoter and must be approved by a special resolution of the SPAC shareholders at a general meeting within a month. The guide also requires the listing document to disclose the SPAC promoter's experience, including information as to their past experience as a SPAC promoter, which should specify their role, level, and duration of their involvement, and the names of SPACs they've previously established or are currently interested in as a SPAC promoter. SPAC promoters also have to provide information to the exchange about their SPAC experience, including information on the amount of funds raised at the SPAC's initial offering, the selection criteria for the de-SPAC target, the size and terms of the promoter shares, a description of the size and types of de-SPAC targets sought, the salient terms of the de-SPAC transaction, and the market capitalization of the successor company. The complete list of information that must be disclosed in the listing document is set out in paragraph 6 of chapter 2.4 to the Guide for New Listing Applicants. As to the disclosure of a SPAC promoter's experience, the exchange's FAQs on SPAC listings provide that SPACs should provide a balanced and fair view and avoid cherry-picking information. With respect to private equity funds, where the fund portfolio includes realized and unrealized or partially realized positions, the listing document disclosure should include the relative size of the respective positions and the valuation methods and their respective time of investment and disinvestment. At least one SPAC promoter must be a firm licensed under the SFO to conduct Type 6 regulated activity, that is, advising on corporate finance and or Type 9 regulated activity, which is asset management, both at listing and for the duration of the SPAC's listing. That SPAC promoter must also beneficially hold at least 10% of the promoter shares issued by the SPAC. A number of respondents to the consultation paper opposed this SFC licensing requirement for different reasons. Some respondents considered that a licensing requirement would exclude experienced and capable overseas SPAC promoters from listing SPACs in Hong Kong and would disincentivize high-quality corporates and or individuals, private equity funds and institutions who are not SFC licensed from becoming SPAC promoters in Hong Kong. Others commented that the regime's safeguards, including the suitability assessment of SPAC promoters and the requirement to appoint an IPO sponsor to conduct due diligence on the de-SPAC target, were adequate to ensure high-quality de-SPAC targets. Additionally, some respondents highlighted that there are no comparable licensing requirements for SPAC promoters in the US, the UK, or Singapore. Nevertheless, the exchange considered that SPACs differentiate themselves primarily on the basis of the experience and reputation of the SPAC promoter, and that potential investors rely on this when deciding whether or not to invest in a SPAC. The exchange concluded that the SFC licensing requirements should ensure that SPAC promoters are competent and enable the regulators to hold them accountable for any breach of the requirements applicable to them. According to paragraph 3 of chapter 2.4 of the Guide for New Listing Applicants and Listing Rule 18B10(1), the exchange will consider waiving the SFC licensing requirement on a case-by-case basis if a SPAC promoter has an overseas accreditation issued by a regulatory authority that the exchange considers equivalent to an SFC Type 6 license for advising on corporate finance or Type 9 license for asset management. Applicants seeking a waiver need to provide documentary evidence that the SPAC promoter has obtained such accreditation and must state whether there are any prerequisites for the SPAC promoter to fulfill for its overseas accreditation and provide a comparison against the requirements for a Type 6 and or Type 9 license. According to the Guide for New Listing Applicants, a SPAC promoter will be deemed to have met the SFC licensing requirement if its controlling shareholder is licensed for regulated activity, Type 6 or Type 9, subject to two conditions. The first is that the SPAC must demonstrate that it has in place sufficient safeguards and or undertakings to ensure the controlling shareholder's oversight of the SPAC promoter's responsibilities. The second condition is that the controlling shareholder must give an undertaking to the exchange that it will ensure the SPAC promoter's compliance with applicable listing rules. Listing rules 18B32 to 18B34 specify requirements that apply on the occurrence of a material change in three specific circumstances. The first is where there's a change in a SPAC promoter who either alone or together with its close associates controls or is entitled to control 50% or more of the issued promoter shares, or if there's no controller, the single largest SPAC promoter. The second situation is where there's a material change in the SPAC promoter holding the required Type 6 or Type 9 license, and the third is where there is a material change in the eligibility or suitability of any SPAC promoter. A material change includes, amongst other things, the departure or addition of a SPAC promoter and a change in control of a SPAC promoter. A change in the eligibility or suitability of a SPAC promoter will include the SFC's revocation or suspension of a SPAC promoter's license or its breach of any laws or regulations having a bearing on its integrity and or competence. In these circumstances, the material change must be approved by a special resolution of the SPAC shareholders at a general meeting within 1 month of the date of the material change. SPAC promoters and their close associates are required to abstain from voting on the resolution. Before the vote on the material change, the SPAC shareholders other than the SPAC promoters must be allowed to redeem their shares. If the material change is not approved within 1 month, the SPAC is required to return all the funds raised at its initial offering to the shareholders, liquidate the SPAC, and delist. Listing Rule 18B13 requires that a SPAC board must include at least two Type 6 or Type 9 SFC licensed persons, of whom at least one must be a licensed person of a SPAC promoter. There's no restriction on the role served by these directors on the board of the SPAC. Directors nominated by a SPAC promoter for appointment to the SPAC board must be officers, as defined in the SFO, of the SPAC promoter that nominated him or her. Chapter 3 of the listing rules applies to SPACs and requires that INEDs comprise at least one-third of their boards, subject to minimum of three INEDs. To ensure proper protection of the funds raised by SPACs, a SPAC must hold 100% of the proceeds received from its initial offering. After deducting proceeds raised from the issue of promoter shares and warrants, in a ring-fenced escrow account domiciled in Hong Kong. The funds must be held in the form of cash or cash equivalents, and the SPAC is responsible for ensuring that the funds are held in a form which will allow the SPAC to meet the shareholders' redemption obligation when required. According to the exchange's FAQs, this means that the SPAC is generally responsible for properly managing any exposure to currency fluctuations, for example, by minimizing the conversion of the IPO proceeds into other currencies, and to market condition related risk by ensuring compliance with the requirement for keeping funds in the form of cash and cash equivalents. SPACs are free to use a trustee or a custodian to hold the funds raised in their IPO. If a trustee is appointed, the trustee must hold the funds on trust, fulfill its duties under the general law on trusts, and discharge its obligations and duties in a manner consistent with Chapter 4 of the SFC's Code on Unit Trusts. Where a custodian is appointed, the custodian must hold the funds pursuant to a custodian agreement, which reflects the custodian's responsibilities under Chapter 4 of the Code on Unit Trusts. The Guide for New Listing Applicants outlines the requirements for the trustee or custodian responsible for operating the SPAC's escrow account. These are that the trustee or custodian must be based in Hong Kong, be independent of the SPAC and its connected persons, including the SPAC promoters, and have been accepted by the SFC as trustee for existing SFC-authorized collective investment schemes. The exchange requires an undertaking from the trustee or custodian to comply with its obligations towards the SPAC and its obligation to not retire except upon the appointment of a replacement trustee or custodian. The exchange has also stated that an escrow agent may be used provided that the escrow agent meets the obligations for a trustee or a custodian. It's worth noting that the custodian or trustee does not need to be a financial institution licensed by or approved by the HKMA. The funds held in escrow may only be released in limited circumstances. These are, first, to meet redemption requests from SPAC shareholders under Rule 18B59, and secondly, to complete a de-SPAC transaction. The funds can also be returned to the SPAC shareholders if the exchange suspends the SPAC's listing or if it's liquidated or wound up. If the funds held in the escrow account are required to be returned to the SPAC shareholders, the trustee or custodian must remit them directly to the SPAC shareholders. SPACs issue promoter shares to the SPAC promoters at nominal consideration to incentivize the SPAC promoters to complete a de-SPAC transaction. The SPAC promoters pay a minimal amount for the promoter's shares, which is much lower than the price of the SPAC shares issued in the IPO. The promoter shares convert into SPAC shares at the time of the de-SPAC transaction. A promoter share is a separate class of SPAC shares issued only to the SPAC promoters. The rights of promoter shares are generally the same as SPAC shares, except that promoter shares are subject to transfer restrictions and do not carry the right to share redemption or to participate in a SPAC's liquidation. Promoter warrants are bought by SPAC promoters as part of a unit in a private placement that closes at the same time as the IPO. Promoter warrants are classified as restricted securities and so can't be resold in the market in Hong Kong. SPAC promoters typically agree not to sell the promoter warrants until 30 days after completion of the de-SPAC transaction or 12 months after the IPO closing. Normally, they expire 5 years after the de-SPAC transaction. The terms of the promoter warrants are normally more favorable than those of SPAC warrants, which normally contain an option for the SPAC to force warrant holders to exercise their SPAC warrants if the shares of the SPAC or the successor company trade above a prescribed trading price. Only SPAC promoters are permitted to beneficially hold promoter shares and promoter warrants. Promoter shares and promoter warrants are not eligible for listing, and SPACs must not certify the transfer of legal ownership of any promoter shares or promoter warrants. Nevertheless, the exchange will in exceptional circumstances waive the restriction on the transfer of SPAC promoter shares to permit a transfer of promoter shares or promoter warrants between SPAC promoter shareholders of the same SPAC. In these circumstances, the transfer between SPAC promoters of the same SPAC must be approved by a resolution of the shareholders at a general meeting. SPAC promoters and their close associates are not allowed to vote on that resolution. The number of promoter shares issued to SPAC promoters must not represent more than 20% of the total number of the SPAC's issued shares at listing. Where the promoter shares are convertible into ordinary shares of the successor company, they must only be convertible at or after the completion of the de-SPAC transaction and on a one-for-one basis. Following completion of the de-SPAC transaction, the exchange may allow rights to be issued to SPAC promoters, entitling them to receive additional ordinary shares in the successor company, so-called earn-out rights, on a case-by-case basis, provided that the total number of successor company ordinary shares issued to the SPAC promoters as earn-out shares and on conversion of the promoter shares does not exceed 30% of the total number of shares in issue at the SPAC's listing. The exchange may also allow SPACs to issue additional rights to SPAC promoters, entitling them to receive additional ordinary shares of the successor company following completion of the de-SPAC transaction as earn-out rights. The earn-out rights shares to SPAC promoters are also conditional on the rights being convertible into earn-out shares only on the satisfaction of objective performance targets, such as a targeted level of revenue or profits, as reported in the successor company's audited financial statements for a specified financial period. If the performance targets are determined by changes in the price of the successor company's shares, the targets must be at least 20% higher than the issue price of the SPAC shares at listing, and satisfied by reference to the volume-weighted average price of the successor company's shares calculated on the basis of the exchange's daily quotation sheets over a period of at least 20 trading days within a consecutive trading period starting at least 6 months after the successor company's listing. The SPAC shareholders must also approve the grant of earn-out rights at the general meeting called to approve the de-SPAC transaction. If the de-SPAC transaction does not complete, the earn-out rights become void. Listing Rule 18B32 prohibits promoter warrants that entitle the holder on exercise to more than one share in the successor company. Promoter warrants cannot be issued at a price that is less than 10% of the issue price of the SPAC shares in the SPAC IPO, and cannot contain more favorable terms than those carried by other warrants issued by the SPAC. The minimum exercise price of promoter warrants and SPAC warrants must represent at least 15% premium to the issue price of the SPAC shares at listing and must only be exercisable after completion of the de-SPAC transaction. Promoter and SPAC warrants must expire at least 1 year after and not more than 5 years after the completion of the de-SPAC transaction and must not be convertible into further rights to subscribe for securities expiring less than 1 year or 5 years thereafter. SPAC promoters, their directors and employees, SPAC employees and their close associates are prohibited from dealing in the SPAC's listed securities before the completion of a de-SPAC transaction. SPAC promoters and their respective close associates are regarded as having a material interest in the issue and or grant of promoter warrants, and they must therefore abstain from voting on the relevant resolutions for an issue of promoter warrants. The exchange treats a de-SPAC transaction in the same way as a reverse takeover, that is, as a deemed new listing. Accordingly, Listing Rule 18B36 requires the successor company, that is, the company resulting from the SPAC's acquisition of or merger with the de-SPAC target, to meet all the listing requirements for new listings under Chapters 8 and 9 of the listing rules. The terms of a de-SPAC transaction must stipulate that the transaction cannot be finalized unless the successor company's shares are approved for listing by the stock exchange. The successor company, that is, the company resulting from the de-SPAC transaction, must meet all the listing eligibility requirements for a new listing under Chapter 8 of the listing rules. The listing process for the successor company under Chapter 9 is the same as for other listing applicants and requires the issue of a listing document and the appointment of at least one sponsor at least 2 months before submission of the successor company's listing application. The prospectus and disclosure requirements of the company's Winding Up and Miscellaneous Provisions Ordinance, FUMPO, apply to the listing application, and the exchange will treat and vet the application in the same way as a normal listing application. With regards to the listing rules requirements on continuity of management and ownership, the exchange will consider de-SPAC transactions in the same way as RTOs, and they will consider granting waivers from the continuity of management and ownership requirements on a case-by-case basis in accordance with their current practice as set out in the guidance letter on the application of the reverse takeover rules. Listed SPAC shares will have a Z marker at the end of their short name, and SPAC warrants have ZYYMM at the end of their short name, representing the expiry year and month of the SPAC warrant. To ensure that de-SPAC targets are businesses with sufficient substance to justify a listing on the exchange requires that the de-SPAC target should have a fair market value of at least 80% of the funds raised by the SPAC at its initial offering prior to any redemptions. As to the determination of fair market value, the exchange expects the SPAC's board of directors to confirm satisfaction of this requirement, taking into account the negotiated de-SPAC value. The exchange will assess the board's confirmation, taking into account the negotiated value of the de-SPAC target agreed by the parties, the sponsor's opinion, the amount committed by an involvement of invalidation by independent third-party investors, and the valuation of comparable companies. Listing rules 18B40 and 18B41 require a SPAC to obtain funds from independent third-party professional investors to complete a de-SPAC transaction. The amount required depends on the negotiated value of the de-SPAC target and is expressed as a percentage. The minimum investment by independent third-party professional investors as a percentage of the negotiated value of the de-SPAC target is set out in the table on the slide. So for a de-SPAC target with a negotiated value of less than $2 billion Hong Kong dollars, the minimum investment required by independent professionals will be 25%. Whereas for a de-SPAC target with a negotiated value above $7 billion Hong Kong dollars, the investment required of independent professionals will be 7.5% of that amount. The exchange may accept a lower percentage than 7.5% for de-SPAC targets with a negotiated value of over $10 billion Hong Kong dollars. The table shows that the negotiated value of the de-SPAC target A, minimum independent professional party investment as a percentage of A, less than 2 billion, as I mentioned, 25%, 2 billion or more but less than 7 billion, 15%, 5 billion or more but less than 7 billion, 10%, 7 billion or more, 7.5%. Listing Rule 18B42 requires that the independent third-party investment must include independent investment from independent sophisticated investors. According to the exchange's guide for new listing applicants, the exchange will consider the significant investment by sophisticated investors requirement to be met if at least 50% of the value of the required independent party investment is contributed by at least three investors, which are each an asset management firm with assets under management of at least 8 billion Hong Kong dollars, or a fund with a fund size of at least 8 billion Hong Kong dollars. In determining the independence of a professional investor in a de-SPAC transaction, the exchange will apply the criteria applied to independent financial advisors. A SPAC must publish a de-SPAC announcement of the terms of a de-SPAC transaction as soon as possible following the finalization of the terms of the de-SPAC transaction, and in any event, no later than 24 months of its listing date under Listing Rule 18B69. The SPAC listing applicant can request an extension of the deadline for completing the de-SPAC transaction, subject to the approval of the exchange. The de-SPAC transaction announcement must include a description of all the independent third-party investors, including the sophisticated investors and the principal terms of their investments. It must also disclose the identities of and amounts committed by the independent third-party investors, as well as the negotiated value of the de-SPAC target and the basis upon which that value was determined. The announcement is also required to set out the Board of Directors' opinion, confirming the satisfaction of the fair market value requirement in Main Mort Rule 18B39, and the basis of such opinion and the material terms of any earn-out rights. The de-SPAC transaction announcement must be submitted to the exchange for comments before its publication. Under Listing Rule 18B70, a SPAC must complete a de-SPAC transaction within 36 months of its listing date. SPACs are allowed to request a six-month extension of either the deadline for publication of the de-SPAC transaction announcement or the deadline for completing a de-SPAC transaction. The extension must be approved by an ordinary resolution of the SPAC shareholders in a general meeting, at which SPAC promoters and their close associates must abstain from voting. Prior to the general meeting to approve the extension of either deadline, shareholders must be given the opportunity to redeem all or part of their shareholdings at the price at which the shares were issued in the SPAC's IPO. A de-SPAC transaction must be conditional on approval of the SPAC shareholders in a general meeting. In respect of the voting arrangements, SPAC promoters and other shareholders with a material interest in the transaction and their close associates are required to abstain from voting. Written shareholders' approval will not be accepted in lieu of holding a general meeting. In respect of the outgoing controlling shareholder of the SPAC, the same rules that apply to a reverse takeover will be applied to the outgoing controlling shareholder. Therefore, a controlling shareholder of the SPAC and its close associates are permitted to vote in favor of the de-SPAC transaction if the controlling shareholder would cease to be a controlling shareholder as a result of the de-SPAC transaction. The exchange doesn't impose any voting restriction on the outgoing controlling shareholder. Where a de-SPAC transaction is a connected transaction under Chapter 14A of the Exchange Listing Rules, the SPAC will be required to comply with the requirements for connected transactions. The SPAC will additionally need to demonstrate that minimal conflicts of interest exist in relation to the proposed transaction, support its claim that the transaction would be on an arm's length basis with adequate reasons, and include an independent valuation of the transaction in the SPAC's listing document. The ability of shareholders to redeem their shares on the happening of certain events is a key feature of SPACs. The ability to redeem shares is also a key shareholder protection mechanism, and shareholders who elect to redeem their shares in the SPAC must receive an amount per SPAC share which is equal to the issue price of the SPAC share at the time of the SPAC's initial listing. A SPAC must give its shareholders the opportunity to redeem all or part of their shareholdings at the price at which the shares were issued in the SPAC's IPO prior to a general meeting to approve a de-SPAC transaction, a material change in a SPAC promoter, or any extension to the deadlines for announcing or completing a de-SPAC transaction. Shareholders are allowed to redeem their shares from the date of the notice of the general meeting under the commencement of that general meeting. The notice convening the shareholders' meeting should clearly inform shareholders of their right to exercise the redemption option as referenced in Rule 18B57. The redemption and the return of funds to the redeeming shareholders must be completed within 5 business days following the completion of the associated de-SPAC transaction, or within 1 month in the case of a material change in a SPAC promoter or any extension to the deadlines for announcing or completing a de-SPAC transaction. SPAC shares that are redeemed must be cancelled. In addition to announcing the voting results at the general meeting, SPAC must also announce the amount of share redemption as soon as practicable after the meeting. On the listing of the successor company, the minimum number of shareholders required at listing is reduced from the usual 300 required under Rule 8082 to 100. The prohibition on marketing SPAC shares to the Hong Kong public in Rule 18B03 does not apply to the successor company's shares. SPAC promoters are restricted from disposing of their holdings in the successor company and from exercising promoter warrants for 12 months after the date of completion of the SPAC transaction. The controlling shareholder of a successor company are also subject to the lock-up provisions of Listing Rule 1007 with respect to disposals of their shareholdings in the successor company following its listing. Controlling shareholders of a successor company are restricted from disposing of their shares in the successor company for 6 months from the date of listing of the successor company and cannot dispose of their successor company shares for a further 6 months if the disposal would result in the controlling shareholder ceasing to be a controlling shareholder. Prior to its initial public offering, a SPAC may enter into a forward purchase agreement with the SPAC promoters or other institutional investors. This agreement would commit the purchaser to subscribe for and the SPAC to issue equity in connection with the de-SPAC transaction at a predetermined amount. The agreement may also grant the purchaser an option to subscribe for additional equity up to a specified limit at the discretion of the purchaser. In the event that the purchaser under the forward purchase agreement is the SPAC promoter or its associate, the agreement would constitute a connected transaction under the listing rules, as the SPAC promoters are considered to be connected persons. A waiver of the connected transaction requirements may be available, provided that the exchange is satisfied with the SPAC's application. The exchange's decisions on these waivers are made on a case-by-case basis and based on the individual merits of each situation. SPACs may seek funds for working capital from their SPAC promoters under a loan or promissory note. The exchange will only allow settlement by the issue of the securities of the SPAC, not at the discretion of the SPAC or SPAC promoter. Settlement either in full or in part by way of conversion of the loan into SPAC securities at the discretion of the SPAC or the SPAC promoter is not allowed. This is to prevent SPAC promoters from circumventing the risk of non-completion of a de-SPAC transaction, which is typically borne by the beneficial owners of SPAC securities. In light of the risk, no discretion of either the SPAC or the SPAC promoter is allowed. The terms of settlement must comply with the rules set out in Chapter 18B. For example, the issue price of each SPAC share must be at least $10. The issue of shares for the settlement of the loan will be considered as a dilution cap. If a loan will be settled by the issue of SPAC shares to the SPAC promoter, this will constitute a connected transaction under Chapter 14A and will require independent shareholders' approval. However, a loan will be fully exempt from the connected transaction requirements if the loan is not and will not be settled by the SPAC securities. The loan is made on normal commercial terms or better, and it's not secured by the asset of the listed issuers group. These requirements are similar to those applicable to normal listing applicants. However, also with regard to a SPAC's expenses, the exchange's FAQs on SPACs note that all expenses must be incurred by the SPAC itself and cannot be recovered if a de-SPAC transaction is not completed. The aim is to ensure that the SPAC promoter's interests are aligned with those of the SPAC shareholders. The FAQs also note that the amount provided by a SPAC promoter to fund its expenses should be commensurate with the promoter's beneficial interest in the promoter's shares. Nevertheless, a SPAC promoter can get a loan from an affiliated company or use a capital contribution from its own shareholders to fund the SPAC's expenses. However, the entities granting a loan or injecting capital into the SPAC promoter must not have any right to demand repayment from or make any claim against the SPAC itself. Before we move on to the application of the Takeovers Code, it's worth quickly comparing the SPAC listing regimes in Hong Kong and Singapore. Singapore's SPAC listing regime was launched 10 months before Hong Kong's. In comparison, Singapore's SPAC listing regime is less restrictive, particularly in that it allows retail investors to participate in SPAC IPOs. While Hong Kong requires at least one of the SPAC promoters to be an SFC licensed firm, there's no comparable requirement for Singapore SPAC promoters. However, the deadline for completion of a de-SPAC transaction in Singapore is tighter at 24 months after the IPO, with a possible extension of up to 12 months on meeting prescribed conditions. Hong Kong's relatively stringent regime is aimed at ensuring the listing of quality companies by promoters with experience of Hong Kong's securities market. Despite Hong Kong's more stringent listing regime, analysts predicted that Hong Kong would be more popular for SPAC listings than Singapore because of its proximity to mainland China and historically deeper liquidity, with around 300 private companies valued at over $1 billion, more than any other country other than the US. China is seen as offering an ample supply of potential acquisition targets for Hong Kong SPACs. However, the CSRC is reported to have imposed a ban on Chinese investment banks acting as promoters for Hong Kong SPACs due to concerns over SPAC-related risks. Nevertheless, Chinese investment banks are allowed to act as advisors on Hong Kong SPACs, while institutions affiliated with Chinese commercial banks, which are regulated by the China Banking and Insurance Regulatory Commission, are permitted to act as promoters of SPACs listing on the Hong Kong Exchange. Chinese brokerage firms have reportedly been lobbying the CSRC to revise their rules to allow them to act as promoters. Turning now to the Takeovers Code in Hong Kong. The Takeovers Code applies to takeovers, mergers and share buybacks affecting public companies in Hong Kong and lists companies with a primary listing of their equity securities in Hong Kong. The takeover code applies from the date of the SPAC's listing until completion of the de-SPAC transaction and to the de-SPAC transaction itself. Where a de-SPAC transaction results in the owner of the de-SPAC target obtaining 30% or more of the voting rights, the application of Rule 26.1 of the Takeovers Code will normally be waived. In these circumstances, the owner of the de-SPAC target needs to make a formal application to the SFC for a waiver. As I've already mentioned, a de-SPAC announcement must be published within 24 months of the date of the SPAC's listing, and the de-SPAC transaction must be completed within 36 months of the listing, although SPACs can apply for a 6-month extension of either deadline. Trading in a SPAC securities will be immediately suspended if either of these deadlines, whether extended or not, is not met, or if a SPAC fails to obtain approval by a special resolution of its shareholders at a general meeting for a material change in a SPAC promoter within 1 month of the change. The exchange is clarified in Listing Rule 18B73 that it does not have a discretion to impose a suspension based on the individual circumstances of a case. Following the suspension of trading in a SPAC's securities, the SPAC will have 1 month to return the IPO funds raised to holders of the SPAC shares on a pro rata basis. The amount repaid must be no less than the issue price of the SPAC shares in its IPO. On returning the IPO funds, the SPAC must publish an announcement of the return of funds and of the upcoming cancellation of its listing. Once funds have been returned to the SPAC shareholders, the exchange will cancel the listing. Delisting of the SPAC will take place before its liquidation. So I think that brings us more or less to the end of our allotted time. Thank you again for joining me today. I hope to see you again in the not too distant future on another webinar. Thank you and bye.